As Dan has already mentioned, we're going to conduct this like a class. I really found that when everybody is thinking about the subject we're talking about, that we all learn a lot more than if you just hear me lecture for 40 minutes about everything that I know. And the added advantage, of course, is I'll learn something that way if we get your participation in it. If you've noticed the announcement, we're going to talk this morning in the class period about why it is we want to study the book of Hebrews. If you've read it or know much at all about the book of Hebrews, or even just the name of the book itself, it would suggest to you that it is a book written for Jews. And I'm going to ask for a show of hands on some things here. How many of you are ethnic or religious Jews? There's nobody here. If you look at chapter 12, you'll find that the book of Hebrews, actually it's mentioned several times throughout the book, but in chapter 12, verses 3 and 4, emphasizes the fact that they would be facing severe persecution to the point where some of them would die. He talked about the fact you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding blood. How many here expect to be persecuted for the cause of Christ in your lifetime? There are a few. And I think you're right. If somebody would look at Galatians chapter 6 and verse 16. Galatians chapter 6 and verse 16. If you found it, just raise your hand and we'll let you start reading that. All right, Galatians 6 and verse 16. All right, Paul here was writing to Christians, and he concludes this letter talking about that this was essentially a blessing of God on the Israel of God. Who is the Israel of God in that passage? It's the church. It's us. So, in one sense, we are all Israelites. Somebody, if you wouldn't mind, look at 2 Timothy chapter 3. And I believe it's verse 12. Second Timothy chapter 3. Dan, if you would.
And indeed all desire to live godly in Christ Jesus would be persecuted.
That's why I asked the question, do you expect to be persecuted as a Christian? If you desire to live godly, the answer is yes, you will be persecuted as a Christian. Now, even though conditions are looking worse in this country, it still seems like it's unlikely, at least in this generation, that we will die for the cause of Christ. Now, there are other parts of the world where that's a very real danger. But that does seem to be unlikely at this time and place for us. But yet, again, we ask the question, why Hebrews? What value does it have for a non-Jewish American Christian who probably will not have to die just because they believe in Jesus Christ? That's really the point of this class this morning. I want to try to help us to see why this book is useful to us, why this book is, in fact, very valuable to us. Generally, when you study a book like this, you start with the typical type of questions. Who wrote the book? Well, Book of Hebrews, that's where a lot of people like to start getting into arguments. Was it Paul? Was it somebody other than Paul? We really don't know for sure. If somebody put a gun to my head, I would say it was not Paul, but I'm not going to argue that for more than a minute or two. That's really not important. If it was important, God would have told us who wrote the book. It doesn't change the message of the book. It doesn't change what its purpose is. Another question is, when was it written? That's another thing that you'll often find if you've got one of those study Bibles at the beginning. It'll tell you, it'll say who wrote the book, when it was written. Again, we really don't know. The only clue that we find in the book of Hebrews is the fact that the temple is spoken of in the present tense. Even that's not utterly conclusive, but it seems likely that it was written before the temple was destroyed. But again, that's not terribly important either. It was certainly written in the first century, and that's really the only thing that matters. more important is, to whom was it written? And that's where we start to get into questions that do matter. That's why I asked the question at the beginning. You know, how many of us would be the target audience for the book of Hebrews? And I hope that we'll all come to realize we all are. We all really are the target audience. The oldest title of the book, and the titles are not inspired by the Holy Spirit. They were given in a later period. But the oldest title of the book is just simply To the Hebrews. That would suggest that it was written to Jewish Christians who were very familiar with the Old Testament. In fact, almost all of the quotations that are found in the book of Hebrews come not from the Hebrew Scriptures, but actually from the Greek translation, the Septuagint version. We'll talk about why that's significant in our sermon later this morning. But I would suggest to you that, in fact, it is useful for all of us, that it is valuable for all of us. And that's because what's most important about the book of Hebrews is its message. As Sid alluded to in the prayer, the message has to do with the Christ. It has to do with the covenant that God has offered through Jesus Christ. And that is just as important to you and to me as it was to whomever it was that wrote it to whatever group of people that he wrote it to. It is a timeless and valuable message. We're going to talk about some of the key concepts that you find in the book of Hebrews. One of the words that you will find in the book of Hebrews throughout the book, and we're going to talk about this Wednesday night, is the word better. What does better suggest? Yeah, improved. That's one. That's part of it. What else would you say when you hear the word better?
More sufficient.
More sufficient? Good. What else? Okay. It says that there's something that it is better than. And that's certainly a very important part of understanding this letter. I mentioned that we find the word better. It's actually found, I just wrote down a quick list, about six different things that are described as being better in the book of Hebrews. Jesus is described as being better than the angels. We're going to talk about that this morning in our sermon. In chapter 6 and verse 9, the writer says, I'm convinced of better things for you. Now, the things is not, you know, clearly defined just by that word. But in the context, he's talking about in contrast to those who have fallen away. And then he says, I'm convinced of better things for you. In chapter 7 and verse 19, we have described there a better hope. That's such an important word, especially as we face those persecutions that the writer was talking about. In chapter 7 and verse 22, he says that we have a better covenant. And then he goes on to emphasize that point to say that it's based on better promises. So the covenant is based on the promise of God. In chapter 9, we find that Christ has offered a better sacrifice. And then in chapter 10, chapter 11, and chapter 12, we're going to see an emphasis on the better possession or the better kingdom. And that's what we're going to end our discussion with this week on Friday evening. So the book of Hebrews is telling us that we have something better, or we have several things that are better. The first one of those, of course, is what Sid alluded to in his prayer and what we're going to talk about in our sermon this morning. That is the Christ. Somebody read the first two verses, if you would, there in chapter 1, verses 1 and 2. All right, there's several contrasts there. One that I find significant is the fact that he says there he spoke in various times and portions or various ways, and prophets in the plural. God used a number of different spokesmen. in times past. But now, in contrast to that, what does he say about the way that he communicates? Yeah, now it's in Christ. There is a singular there. Now, I recognize the fact that Jesus did not write one word of the Bible. The New Testament does not contain one word that Jesus put down on parchment or papyrus or whatever they used for writing at that time. Yet the message is the message of Jesus. Whereas before, the prophets were not really the key to the message. They were simply the ones who delivered it. Now we find where Jesus is the key. And if you would go to chapter 13 and look at verses 20 and 21. Somebody could read that, please. Yes, please. You'll find this with a lot of the books of the Bible, that it begins with a concept or a theme, and then the writer will go through all of the instruction they give us, but will bring us back to that same theme of which they began. And the writer of Hebrews certainly does that. Starts with the idea that it is all in Jesus, and concludes with the idea that it is all in Jesus. And if there is nothing else you take from our study this week, then the one thing that you must take away is that the focus must be on Jesus. That is the primary message of the book of Hebrews. There's another thought that comes to mind in looking at some of the key concepts that we find in the book of Hebrews. If somebody would turn to chapter 10... Chapter 10, and if you could read verses 35 through 39.
Do not therefore abandon the confidence of yours that brings a great reward. For you need endurance, so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what is promised. For yet in a very little while, the one who is coming will come and will not delay. But my righteous one will live by faith. My soul takes no pleasure in anyone who shrinks back. But we are not among those who shrink back and so are lost, but among those who have faith and so are saved.
I mentioned earlier the idea that they would be facing severe persecution to the point where some of them were going to die for the cause of Christ. What happens to people when they're persecuted? What kind of reactions do you find? Just take a group of people and put them through persecution. What's going to happen with some in that group? Yeah, some are going to give up and drop out. What are some of the others going to do? Yeah, they're going to get stronger. The interesting thing is very rarely do you find anybody who stays the same. They're either going to get stronger or they're going to die. It's kind of like exercise. Exercise is persecution of the body. And when you do that, you either give up, your body gives out, or you get better at whatever it is you're training for. But is it the persecution that's really the problem, David? Exactly. Right. Yeah, exactly. And the ones who do, they think it's better. I mean, you know, there are some people just like to live in the outdoors, and they do so because they think it's better. So if this persecution is taking one person, making them stronger, and taking another person and making them give up, Is persecution actually the problem? You know, what's the problem? Yeah, it's them. The problem really deals with who am I? What kind of a person am I? How prepared am I? And that's what the book of Hebrews is about. Although it mentions the persecutions that they were going to face, it doesn't focus on that. Instead, it focuses on what the writer was talking about and what we just read there in chapter 10. You have need of endurance. You have need of being prepared so that when the persecution comes, you know how to deal with it in a positive way. If persecution was bad, would God allow that to happen to us? No. We serve a God who not only cares about us deeply, but also has all power. What we need to recognize is it's not the persecution that is the problem. Satan wants us to think that. But instead, what we need to recognize is what does God emphasize? What God emphasizes is our need for endurance, our needs for strength. I mentioned in chapter 12 where he talks about the persecutions. He then tells those who are strong that they're to do what? Yeah, help the weak. Strengthen the limbs that are out of joint, the hands that are weak. Yes? Yeah, absolutely. Just as God has demonstrated love for us in how he prepares us with books like the book of Hebrews, he expects us to show that kind of love by, in fact, using the book of Hebrews to help all of us become stronger, to help all of us be prepared for the persecution, to be prepared for what we're going to face. And that's why this book of Hebrews is so very valuable for us to study, because what it does is it prepares us for what Satan is going to be putting in our path. But if we are prepared in God's way, then not only will we be able to overcome what Satan will put in our path, we in fact will be strengthened by that. That's the wonderful thing about the message of God, is that not only does he enable us to overcome Satan, but in fact he uses what Satan does to us to help us. I just kind of wonder how much that must just really bug Satan, that he tries so hard to destroy us, and God is using that to make us stronger. Now, the book of Romans also makes that point so very clear. All right, let's look in chapter 10 again. And another thing we notice in that reading, down in verse 38, my righteous one shall live by faith, but if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him. Does anybody happen to know where that comes from? Quotation from the Old Testament. I've got a friend who preaches out in California, and I was at a place where we were having a retreat and doing some Bible study, and I presented a study on this very verse and talking about how that far too often we don't know where these Old Testament quotations come from. We recognize if you got a Bible like this one, it'll have it in different kind of text. And so, you know, that's an Old Testament quotation, and maybe there'll be a cross-reference in there. And we say, oh, I know that comes from Habakkuk chapter 2 and verse 4 and 5. But do you know what the book of Habakkuk is about? And that's what I talked to. He said, oh, I've talked about the Old Testament so well that I know my congregation knows that. And he said, in fact, I'm gonna do a test. And he just kind of put that in the bulletin article or something and asked people to, you know, let him know if they knew where that came from and what the context was. And then he sent me a message back. He said, I'm sorry. We really don't know the Old Testament as well as we need to, particularly Old Testament prophets. It kind of scares us. We see symbolic language and we're not sure what these references are. The book of Habakkuk was written to the Jews in the dying days of Jerusalem. It was during the time where the people of Israel were, the northern kingdom had long been conquered and taken away into captivity. The southern kingdom was under just horrific kings that had led the people into idolatry, and the people quite literally were willingly led into that kind of idolatry. And God is sent the book, the prophet Habakkuk, basically with a last warning for the people that would listen. And he's telling them about the Babylonians who are going to come and destroy Jerusalem. And he tells them in this prophecy there in chapter 2, if you are willing to listen to my warning, you will survive. You'll live because you trusted me. And he says, but those who are arrogant and will not listen will be destroyed. That's the context in which that passage was written. But it's so significant we understand that because that verse is quoted at least three different times in the New Testament in three different books in three different contexts, but all giving that same warning to God's people today that if we will be faithful enough, if we will trust God enough, we will survive. But if we arrogantly trust ourselves, then we will fall back to destruction. The writer of Hebrews is emphasizing that point. Because in the next chapter, Hebrews chapter 11, what is the key word in that chapter? Or maybe the key phrase? By what? By faith. I call it God's Hall of Faith. Thursday night is when we're planning to talk about that. But it really starts from what he said there at the last part of chapter 10, where he's emphasizing these are the people who trusted God, and because they trusted God, they were delivered. They were saved. And that same message is for us. That's why we need to study the book of Hebrews, is so that we understand where that God's salvation, God's deliverance will come from. And I did not ask, how long do I go? Okay, great. I just wasn't sure how far, and I wanted to make sure I didn't run over because I've got kind of a bad reputation for that. All right, let's talk just a little bit about that covenant, that promises that we were talking about. Let's look in chapter 7 and verse 22. Let me back up and start in verse 18. Somebody could read verses 18 through 22.
Well, on one hand, there is an annulling of the former commandment because of this weakness and impossibleness. The law made nothing perfect. On the other hand, there is the bringing of the better hope through which we draw near to God. And inasmuch as he has not made priests without an oath, but then they have become priests without an oath, that he, an oath by him who said to him, Lord has sworn, and will not relent, you are a priest forever, according to the order of Melchizedek. By so much more, Jesus has become surety of a better covenant.
Okay. In this particular section of the book of Hebrews, which we're going to talk about on Tuesday night, we find this better hope, this better covenant, but it's based on the fact that Jesus is a better high priest. One of the things he emphasizes in the context we just read is the idea that Jesus became a high priest because God had sworn it, whereas before a high priest became high priest because his father had been a high priest and his father had died. But now Jesus becomes high priest because his father swore that he would be high priest. But in addition to that, notice what the writer says there. He says, so much the more that Jesus has become a guarantee or guarantor of a better covenant. This contrast, again, as Sid talked about, you find a comparison between that which was before and that which comes after. What was before was the law. Now, in Mark's translation, I like the way it translated. It said, it was it incapable, I think it said there at the last part of verse 18?
Weakness and unprofitability.
I like that translation because what it really helps us to understand, the law was not broken. Some people will describe that as being broken or the law was somehow sinful. No, that's not true at all. Paul discusses this quite a bit more in the book of Romans and in Galatians. There was nothing wrong with the law for what it was designed to do. But what the book of Hebrews is explaining to us, the law was not designed to deal with sin. In fact, the law was only designed to point out sin, but it had no answer for sin. And the reason why the covenant that comes through Christ is better is because it does have an answer for sin. That's why Jesus has become the better guarantee, if you would, or guarantor, in the sense that he has presented this covenant of God, maybe we should say fulfilled this covenant that God had offered to mankind. He is the guarantee of it. So you might know when that covenant was first promised by God, first delivered to man. I often teach people in Paris, this is one of the most important chapters in the Bible. It's Genesis chapter 12. What happens in Genesis chapter 12? Yeah, God makes a promise to Abraham. He called him from his father's home, told him to leave the land where he'd grown up, the only land he'd ever known, to leave his family, and to journey where? Well, Abraham didn't know. How many of us are willing to pack up our belongings, leave our homes, and know we're never going back, and we don't know where we're going? But God asked Abraham to do that. Abraham was a very wealthy man. He was successful at whatever it was he was doing in Ur of Chaldees. And yet God called him. And Abraham left all of that and followed after God. The book of Hebrews is going to emphasize that point. That's one of those by faith statements that we find in Hebrews chapter 11. But that was the beginning of the covenant, because at the end of those seven promises that God made to Abraham, he told him, in your seed will all the families or the nations of the earth be blessed. And of course, who was that talking about? That's talking about Jesus. It's talking about that better covenant that is guaranteed or fulfilled in Jesus. And so the writer of Hebrews is taking all of these concepts, the things we've been talking about this morning, contrasting them with what was before. What do people tend to do when times of persecution? When you've got a lot of stress going on in your life, what is it that you tend to do? Some people look for popcorn. Why? Or ice cream. What do we call those kind of foods? Comfort foods. Some people may just kind of sit in front of the TV and watch it. I can remember very well 9/11/2001. We were living in Bulgaria. Somebody called us and told us that they were very sorry for our country. And of course, we didn't know what they were talking about. And we flipped on the television and we didn't flip it off for about 12 hours. Because we'd been persecuted. It was shocking. And so we just sat there in front of the TV, just watched the same images over and over and over again, listening to the same people talking over and over and over again. But we didn't want to stop. Because again, we go back to something that gives us comfort. We were listening to people speaking English. Most of them spoke with an American accent. CNN International, not always, but it was still something that was comforting to us. What do people do when they're facing persecution? Well, they go back. They revert. They go back to things that feel comfortable to them. Now, when you think about Jewish Christians that are facing persecution, what are they tempted to go back to? Yeah. Revert back to those things that their family has been doing for generations. The concepts of which likely many of them had actually grown up following. Things that they probably were still practicing. We know that Paul was still practicing things like keeping the Passover, going to the temple when he went to Jerusalem. We know that there were Jews that were still practicing some of those things. But now when persecution comes, now when difficulties are striking, what are they going to do? They're tempted to look back. Now do we understand what the book of Hebrews is all about? The book of Hebrews is written to give them comfort in Jesus Christ. And it is written to give us comfort in Jesus Christ. So if I'm wrong in my perception that we won't face death for the cause of Christ, the answer is found in the book of Hebrews. If we know others that are facing that kind of difficulty today, the answer is found in the book of Hebrews. I don't care what their culture is. I don't care what their language is. I don't care what generation they are. The answer is found, not just in the book of Hebrews, but that's really what the primary purpose of the book of Hebrews is. And so we're going to talk all this week about how these things help us in those difficult times. We're not going to just try to read through the book, you know, just preaching a chapter each night. But more what I want to do is highlight various topics that come from the book of Hebrews. And that will help prepare us for those eventualities. So you might have any questions. Well, I hope that you will find this series of studies to be very useful. They have been for me. I have really enjoyed every time that I have preached this series. I've changed it a little bit each time. I've got, I think, two completely new lessons that I'm doing this week that I've never done before. But it's still a study from Hebrews, and it has helped me so very much. And I got done early.